Welcome to All Sides with Ann Fisher. Board games. Maybe you're a fan of the classics. Monopoly, Scrabble, or Operation was one of my favorites as a child. But these days, there are hundreds of new games with recent success stories such as Settlers of Catan and Cards Against Humanity. Even at a time when video games seem to be everywhere, tabletop games are more popular than ever, with 2016 global non-electronic game sales reaching well over $9 billion. Joining us now to talk about the resilience and resurgence of board games is the editor of Drink Up Columbus and founder of the Beers and Board Games Club of Columbus, Cheryl Harrison. Welcome back, Cheryl.
Good morning, Ann.
Also with us is the executive director of the Game Manufacturers Association, John Ward. Welcome, John.
Good morning. Thanks for having us.
You're right here in Columbus.
We are.
The Game Manufacturers Association. So we're talking about board games, tabletop games.
All types of non-electronic games. So board games, miniatures, role-playing games, collectible card games, all those hobby market games. And we are headquartered here in Columbus, right on Fifth Avenue downtown.
How many members do you have?
We've got somewhere around 1,700 members of companies, and that includes both manufacturers, distribution, and hobby retail stores.
How do you describe the business of tabletop board games these days?
Business for us is doing really well. In 2016, we actually broke over the $1.4 billion mark as an industry. So you've got a lot of things that have helped us a lot, things like crowdfunding devices, Kickstarter, board games, and games in general are the number one funded item on Kickstarter right now, more than movies or anything else.
Why do you think it lends itself to crowdsourcing?
Well, we've got a lot of small and entrepreneurial companies. So they use a lot of those crowdfunding devices as really entrepreneurial dollars to start and also to gauge interest in product lines. So you'll see companies that will kickstart an idea and they'll gain a lot of steam and they might be able to expand the print run of that product to maybe three or four times what they would have been able to do had they just judged the market on their own and done a small product launch. And that's a real big thing for our industry because with a lot of small companies, how much you invest in that print run really decides what makes it down to the local hobby store to be sold to consumers.
Yeah, is that where the games are at hobby stores?
Hobby stores, and a lot of them make it into mass. If you know, here in Columbus, if you go to Barnes & Noble's, you'll see all sorts of board games in that section. Those are primarily our companies.
It's hard to imagine thousands or hundreds of new games.
There are tons of new releases every year. You know, people think because I'm in this industry, I can keep track of the new releases, and there's just no way. It's a very, very robust market.
Cheryl Harrison, how did you get into this? Have you always liked board games and just grew into it as an adult?
I definitely played board games a lot as a kid.
Yeah.
You know, both of my parents used to force us to sit down and have a family game night, and we'd play Boggle and Scrabble and the always hostile Monopoly, and you know, just kind of grow out of it because those games sort of have a short-term appeal. And so later in life, I discovered games like Mafia, which is a social deception type of game, and Settlers of Catan, which is a lot of people's kind of gateway board game into these kind of modern Euro games. And so as I found these games about 5 or 6 years ago, I was really looking for other people locally to play with them, and I didn't have a lot of friends who were into board games at the time. And so I kind of sent out a tweet into the world to see if anybody wanted to meet up at a bar and play some board games. And 4 years later, we've got over 1,000 people in what is now called Beers and Board Games Club.
And where do you fit all of them?
It varies. So we have a meetup every single Wednesday in the back room of Smokehouse Brewing Company.
Uh-huh.
And so we can fit about 100 people back there pretty comfortably. So we get around 50 people who show up every single week. And then we have some special bigger events. And so this weekend we're going to have our annual 24-hour board game marathon at Four Strings Production Brewery in Hilltop. Expecting closer to 300 people at this event, and all the proceeds from it are going to benefit Nationwide Children's Hospital. So it's going to be a really good time to come out and check out some new board games and help a good cause.
If you want to learn more about that, we'll have a link on our website at WOSU.org/allsides. You know, listeners, we'd love to hear from you this hour about what your favorite board game is and why you love it. Maybe some memories of being forced to play board games when you were a kid. I don't think we were ever forced to play them, but it was just sort of what we did. And I remember that when my son was younger, wanted, you know, neighborhood kids to come over, I especially bought a coffee table that would fit big board games on it so you could all kind of curl up around the coffee table and he could beat the pants off me in Monopoly and that kind of a thing. 614-292-8513 or email us at allsides@wosu.org. What's your favorite board game? share your ideas. John, the Game Manufacturers Association hosts an annual conference in Columbus. It's called the Origins Game Fair. What happens at that event and who does it attract?
It's a citywide event here in Columbus. Last year we had about 59,000 people turnstile at the convention center.
Wow.
And the surrounding hotels. So it's a pretty big party. It's very family friendly, and any game you can imagine, non-electronics, you're going to find there to be able to play and have fun. So we also attract larger events. So you'll have companies that will do organized play through retail hobby stores. So they'll have launches every week to support their gaming product lines. And then they'll have people that will qualify in those tournaments to go to a regional or a national tournament. And we host those kinds of tournaments in Columbus. So even though, like, WizKids runs their world tournament with us every year, last 3 years. So they have a huge draw that comes to Columbus. HeroClix is their tournament. It's sort of like playing chess with superheroes. So you get your team of superheroes or super bad guys, and you fight other guys on like a chessboard, or guys or gals, and it is just a lot of fun. So they launch unique products at the show every year to support their tournament structure. It's just a really, really fun family-based event.
I think your job might be kind of fun.
My 10-year-old thinks the dad has the coolest job in the world.
Gosh. What do you think, Cheryl?
You know, I drink for a living, but I'm a little jealous of the board game side of things.
You've managed to combine both of your loves.
Right. I've tried to, yeah.
So when we think about hundreds of new games all the time and all these new, are they mostly small manufacturers? Let me ask you this, all of this a little different way. Who are the big players in the board game?
Well, you'll see companies that are breach both sides of the house. So you've got companies like Wizards of the Coast, who does Magic.
I've never heard of them before.
So Magic, the card game, is a collectible card game. You have two wizards basically dueling each other. Any mom or dad or family that checks out a Walmart is going to see Magic cards for sale on the checkout lines.
Okay.
They're one of the largest companies in our industry. It's a subdivision of Hasbro. The Magic product line is the number one selling game at Hasbro. So those types of events, those companies are very big. They also have board game sections in their companies where they'll do neat board games. A lot of old Avalon Hill games that they've purchased that intellectual property. Axis and Allies, which is a reenactment of World War II. So you'll see companies that will breach over into different products. Other big companies in our market are obviously folks like Pokemon. You know, everyone's seen with Pokemon Go, the resurgence of a lot of Pokemon sales, which is a lot of fun. And I think we see a lot of young people my son's age who are so tied into electronics now that they really miss the social aspect of playing games. My son will sit down on his Minecraft game with his iPad so he can FaceTime his friends so it's like they're playing together because they really want that personal connection. And so I think even though electronics is doing really well in our markets, that's why we've also seen the resurgence of the board games and the non-electronic games. Last year, our games, depending on the genre, were up anywhere between 17% and 29%. So it's a lot of new market sales, and there's a lot of money coming into the industry as we're getting bigger and bigger.
There's something to be said for just moving a piece around a board, right, Cheryl Harrison? It feels good. There's something about that.
Yeah, it's definitely a tactile experience, and like John said, it's something that gives you a social element that people are sort of missing in our digital world. And so you go to most bars in Columbus at this point, and there's a couple board games.
Yeah,
because
there are.
People are looking for something to do to interact with each other instead of just sitting in silence over a beer and staring at a sports game.
The TV, the proliferation of televisions is ridiculous. But is there a type of person that responds to your tweets about, you know, the beers and boards?
Well, what's fascinating about our club specifically is how varied the people are who come to our group. We have people who are 21 to people who are 60, people who are what I would consider more nerd inclined, and people who are not, people who just are looking for something fun and different to do. And so there are so many different types of board games. There are party games like Taboo, games along that line where it's, you know, just sort of fun social games. There's games that are 2 or 3 hour strategy games and everything in between that. And so there's so much variety in gaming that there's something that appeals to pretty much any type of would-be gamer.
So at the 24-hour gaming marathon to benefit Nationwide Children's Hospital, is there one game that's played or all different kinds of games?
There will be probably at least 300 different games at that event. And so the great thing about our group is I'm kind of lazy, and so I don't like to read rules and figure out a game. And so I love going to our meetups because people bring their own games from their personal collection that they're very familiar with. And so somebody teaches you the game. And so if you're not really familiar with games, it's a great time to show up. If there's something you're interested in playing or if there's a game about to start, jump in. Somebody will help you figure out the rules. But we will have, close to 300 games. We're also going to have some Mario Kart and Rock Band and a couple electronic games, especially for the early morning hours when we're all starting to doze off.
You need to get up and move a little bit. Lori in Worthington, you're on the air. Hi, Lori.
Hi.
Go ahead.
Great topic for today's show. Yeah. I just wanted to make a comment. Growing up, my favorite game was the Game of Life.
Yeah.
I have two brothers, and we used to play a lot. I think it was just something for us to do as siblings. As I got older, like teenager years, my brother was 2 years older, he started making us play games like Twixt and Luftwaffe, and those were games that were like really complicated, and we didn't understand them, so my younger brother and I started hating board games.
Ah.
But when I had my own children, we would have game night, and I think I kind of maybe did the same thing to our son. He, we were playing Scrabble, Monopoly, Sorry. Just a lot of the classic ones. He liked Othello, too, because that was, after he got a little bit older, that was something that really intrigued him. He's like, I got to win.
But you think you turned him off?
Well, he went to electronics after he got his first Game Boy. I think that was the end of family game night.
Now, that's probably happened to a lot of people, that old Game Boy. Thanks a lot, Lori.
Sure. All right, thanks.
If he likes Othello, I would look for games in the abstract strategy type of category.
What's that?
It's games that don't necessarily have extremely complicated rule sets or really in-depth themes to them, but think of something like chess, right? You know, the pieces only can do certain things, but depending on what you do and your opponent does, it really affects the game. And so a game in that vein that I'm really into right now, it's two players, called Onitama. You've got five pieces on each side and a set number of specific moves each piece can do, but you're kind of passing those moves back and forth. And so there's really interesting ebb and flow to the game. So I love that game, Onitama. It reminds me a lot of Othello, but a little better.
Yeah.
Well, the other thing you can take a look at, too, is a lot of us had that experience where we had people playing games with us that were more complicated than we were ready for.
Yeah.
So there's a lot of games that are out now that are collaborative games. Everyone at the table plays against the game itself. So Pandemic is one of those games. It's one of the Origins Award winners. So it's everybody trying to stop a global pandemic, and everyone has a different role at the table, whether you're the medic or the doctor or the transportation person. So those are fun games because a skill level player that's more experienced can sort of coach and help the other players at the table without them feeling like they're getting run over by a freight train.
Right. Okay. Thank you, Lori in Worthington. We are going to continue our conversation about board games this hour. And I'm wondering, John Ward, can you stay with us?
Sure.
Okay. John Ward's going to stay with us. He's the executive director of the Game Manufacturers Association. Also with us, Cheryl Harrison, editor of Drink Up Columbus and also founder of the Beers and Board Games Club of Columbus. They are having their third annual 24-hour gaming marathon to benefit Nationwide Children's Hospital coming up this weekend. So check out the link on our website at WOSU.org/allsides to learn more about that if you want to participate. Also, we'd love to hear what your favorite game is growing up, maybe right now. 614-292-8513 or email us at allsides@wosu.org. We'll be right back. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. Welcome back to All Sides. I'm your host, Ann Fisher. We're talking about the continuing popularity of board games, whether it's classics such as Sorry or Clue or newer games like Exploding Kittens. Family and friends are still gathering around the table to play with cardboard and die. Still with us is editor of Drink Up Columbus and founder of the Beers and Board Games Club of Columbus, Cheryl Harrison. The club hosts its third annual 24-hour gaming marathon this weekend. Benefits at Nationwide Children's Hospital. For more information, check out the link on our website at WOSU.org. Still with us, John Ward. He's executive director of the Game Manufacturers Association based here in Columbus. And joining us now is the owner of Tabletop Game Cafe in Clintonville, Aaron Brown. Welcome to the show, Aaron.
Hey, thanks for having me.
How did you arrive at the idea of actually opening up a cafe?
About 2001 in New York City, I was working for a dot-com, and it was kind of like this, it was the dot-com boost, and New York City had the Silicon Alley, and there was like this big congregation of, you know, the more nerdy folks that Cheryl mentioned earlier, all working together, and we all started talking about what we used to do in high school and stuff, and there was a lot of talk about how we used to play games together, and we would play Dungeons and Dragons or Warhammer or Talisman or all these games that we were really familiar with. And so we're like, hey, we should start doing that again. And so we started, you know, a little group called Nerd NYC, and we started renting out black box theaters or rehearsal spaces and coffee shops and hosting little game weekends, game nights, board game meetups, a thing called the Gotham Gaming Guild. And out of it, we always wanted to start our own bar cafe, but this was way early in kind of the resurgence, and we were, you know, in New York City, real estate is at quite a premium,
yeah.
And so we did, you know, our business plan, and it said no, but we still had this great community, so we had a thing that was very similar to what Cheryl's doing now in Columbus, and just we would just meet up in different places. We had a message board. People would go see movies together, and just kind of like gaming was kind of our shared language, but it was really about the socialization, about getting together and having that bond.
I was stopped in traffic briefly in front of your place on High Street and noticed people in there on in a late afternoon. And do you just serve coffee and soft drinks kind of a thing? Or?
We have a full liquor license. We have
okay.
beer and wine. We have beers on tap. We have a bunch of wine. We have some awesome Argentinian style handmade empanadas that we have, as well as
it looked like younger people though that were in there.
It depends on the night.
Okay.
And what is absolutely great is the multi-generational aspect of games, and particularly like what John was mentioning right before the break. The cooperative games are such a great time to bring in young people because of that helping factor. Like two nights ago, at home after dinner, before screen time, we're like, hey, we asked the kids if they wanted to play a game of Pandemic. You know, my daughter's on the young side of the age range for it, but she can ask for advice and she can do her stuff and then the rest of the group can kind of correct. But we're battling against this disease that are going across the U.S. And we had a great time, and it was like the last card of the game we won. So it was super tense. It like has the feeling of like you're part of a movie. You know, you're building up and you're doing these things together and you're making a plan.
There's a plot.
Exactly. And you have this plot throughout. Different parts of the map will explode and have problems.
You know, John Ward, how many games kind of deal with these sort of dark topics like a pandemic?
Well, there's a whole range.
Is that something?
There's a whole range of dark. Everything
yeah, okay.
from, you know, vampire-themed games, just like Buffy the Vampire Slayer, all the way up to My Little Pony. So if there's an interest in any intellectual property rights, Star Wars, superheroes, anything you can think of in our culture, there's a game that reflects that intellectual property
right. People love the characters.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
You know, this is a generation now. You know, I'm a little older, so our generation was a generation of collectors. We collected baseball cards, and we collected things of those nature. This is a generation now more based on experiences, and
yeah.
they're collecting those experiences, and they want to do the interaction that they can do in the clubs and that they can do in local hobby stores, and they're looking for those opportunities to put that stuff on their social media and Instagram it and Facebook it and say, hey, I'm having a blast. Don't you wish you were doing what I was doing? And, you know, those are the things that theme parks used to capitalize on now, but they're becoming much more localized for this younger generation that's in our society now.
Joanne in Columbus, you're on the air. You have a favorite game?
Yes, it was always Sorry.
Why did you like that?
I don't know. I just thought it was a good game because, you know, it was kind of frustrating, but it was fun. And I like Parcheesi, too. But it was something that the really young kids could play. And I, you know, I kind of didn't, you know, in other words, if I had one, a little granddaughter that was 6 years old and I was able to take her piece, I did, but I explained to her that, you know, this is part of the rules of the game. I wasn't being, you know.
Oh, yeah. I mean, no, that's it's a teaching moment about life, you know. Thanks a lot, Joanne. Appreciate that.
Bye-bye.
Yeah. A lot of that, right?
Yeah, there's so many games that kind of fit into that bucket, which is kind of like a press your luck kind of game. So lots of chance if you want something that's a little less strategy intense. There's tons of games that fit in that bucket. I play one called Deep Sea Adventure a lot, where you're scuba diving for treasure and you're trying to make it back to the submarine before you collectively run out of air.
Is it a board game?
Yes. It's a very small little game. You can kind of fit it in your purse, but kind of a similar mechanic, and you get to screw people over a little bit, which is always a little fun.
You know, when people come to your place, how should one plan how much time to spend?
You know, and that's what is great about our – we have a library of close to 500-plus games, and we have – we try to have a little bit of everything. So we have games that can take 3-4 hours, and we have games that you can finish in 10-15 minutes.
Okay.
Because we're so close to some restaurants nearby and an escape room and a video game store, people pop in for a quick drink and to play a game over 15 minutes. And something like Love Letter, like Sorrow, can be done in, you know, 15-20 minutes, even with teaching it.
Talking about board games this hour, you're listening to All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. Nick in Columbus, you're on the air. Hi, Nick.
Hi, Ann. Hi. My name's Nick, obviously. I'm one of the gamers that plays with Cheryl on a regular basis.
Oh, okay.
Hey, Nick.
Hi. I've been in this hobby for over 30 years. I'm dating myself a bit here. Over those years, I have either volunteered or contracted with different game companies or organizations. So I've volunteered for John many times over the years.
Thank you.
I've been out to Tabletop and seen Aaron many times. So, yes, this is a hobby that has been around for a long time, and it's just so exciting to see this hobby grow. This is really the golden age of games, I believe, because the quality of them right now is so great and people are so creative. So it's fantastic to see something that's been my lifelong hobby become so popular. And my favorite game, I prefer the German-style Euro games. I would probably pick Power Grid as my personal favorite.
Okay. Thanks a lot, Nick, for the call. What do we mean? You mentioned that, Cheryl, Euro games. What's the diff?
So typically when people say Euro games, they're referring to games that are a little bit longer to play, involve a couple different mechanics of gaming, have a little bit more strategy, and usually a little bit of a theme that really carries through the game. The popularity of those really started at the end of the 70s with something called the Spiel des Jahres, which is a German award given out. It means Game of the Year. And so Germany started giving out this award for board games, which I think comes with like a $100,000 prize. And so people wanted to make board games.
Yeah.
And one of the early winners of that is a game called Rummy Cube that I think a lot of people might be familiar with, which is a little more mainstream of a game. But that really led to a lot of people coming up with these kind of innovative, really immersive games to compete in this competition. And these days, if you win this award, you're pretty much guaranteed to sell a million copies of your game. And so it's a very lucrative award to go after. And Origins gives out awards as well. And so just kind of recognition for gaming led to some more innovation in the space.
John Ward, I mean, do people call your association, or do you help people develop games? Do you give them guidance?
We do tons of entrepreneurial and company support. In addition to the Origins event, we also run the largest business-to-business event in the country. That's in Reno. It's in March each year, and just about every company that does business in the industry is going to be present at the Gamma Trade Show. And there's everything from teaching to stores on peer best practices to manufacturers releasing new games. games and telling retail stores how to demo them. You know, we've got, as Aaron was saying, there's so many new games that are out right now that no individual can keep track of all the good new game releases. So having manufacturers that are talking to you as a retail store owner on how these games work and what it's similar to be like another game that you're already familiar with and the way those games are played in a consolidated effort, literally a series of teaching classes on how to demo game products. It's really helpful for those of us that do this for a living in the market. You know, those award programs are also another metric to help people identify what are good games. Mm-hmm. I agree that, you know, like the Origins Awards is a peer-based program, so it's not a fee-based one. It's very mm-hmm. similar to the Spiel and Essen. So when those games get nominated for awards in the top five or top seven, that lets people know that they've got a lot of solid metrics that are being evaluated by manufacturers and by retail store owners and media outlets in our industry. And that really helps people say, well, what's that game sort of like? And our games of the year also are another big indicator of that. Last couple of years, we've been pretty much in line with the Spiel in the nominations as well. So it's seeing that awards program in the United States pick up more steam. Mm. The European game market has been around a lot longer and more established than the U.S. market. Mm. The kinds of things that we were talking about earlier with seeing bars and having board games in bars is sort of new in our environment. In our last decade, it's been like that in Europe probably for the last 20 years, maybe last 25 years. So that's been a nice change in seeing that sort of style of play coming to the U.S.
Brian in Bowling Green, you're on the air. Hi, Brian.
Hey, Ann. How are you doing?
Good, thanks.
Good. I just wanted to leave a quick comment. I'm a former Columbusite. I've been to the tabletop board gaming. I've been to beers and board games. It's always a great event. And I would say my favorite type of game is kind of the thematic game, you know, that has, you know, elements of, you know, if it's a scary game, there are scary elements. If it's a mystery game, there are mystery elements. And my favorite game right now is called Mysterium. Actually,
what is that?
It's kind of like Clue, but it's co-op, and it's a whole lot of fun.
You mean it's collaborative?
Yeah, I'm sorry. It's cooperative. It's collaborative.
Okay,
yeah.
Gotcha.
So everybody is working together to kind of solve multiple mysteries at once.
Okay.
And there's a ghost who's trying to help solve the murders, and it's a whole lot of fun.
Okay. Thanks, Brian. Thanks for listening.
Mm-hmm.
There's some really beautiful art in Mysterium too. If you like really weird abstract art, Mysterium is really cool.
On cards or something?
Yeah, so the premise of the game is there's a ghost and they're trying to send a message of their murder to the mediums, and so they can't use words though, so they can only use these very abstract images to communicate a meaning. And so you have to look at this blue card with a stick and try to figure out how that relates to a kitchen somehow. It's a very interesting game.
And there's just, you know, so many different kinds of games coming out here. I'm sure you're a little overwhelmed with hearing all these names that we throw out. And, you know, the rise so much like, the Spiel came out in the 70s, and it's only been recently that they added two big new categories to it because there were so many games and gamers were being upset that their game was being forgotten. So they added a Kinderspiel and a Kinderspiel version of it as well. So that way you have, you know, the game of the year, you have the kids game of the year, then you have kind of the hobbyist game of the year, which is a little bit more of the complex, robust game. And so, you know, it's, you know, they've been evolving because of all these pressures for people who are putting out more and more games and are loving more and more games that they've had to add, you know, more categories to this very classic award.
We have an email from Adam. He says He says, I still love Dungeons & Dragons. I play pen and paper as well as Dungeons & Dragons online. And Dungeons & Dragons is getting a real, you know, shot in the arm these days because of course, Stranger Things, the Netflix, you know, the huge Netflix flick. And it is a lot of fun to see how the kids play it. I've never played it before. And I'm kind of intrigued by how they're doing it. They're doing pen and paper, I guess, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and people still play that today. My fiancé is in a Dungeons & Dragons group. And there's a lot of tabletop board games that take place in the Dungeons & Dragons universe. So if you are like him and you grew up reading these stories and loving these characters, then there's a game called Lords of Waterdeep I was playing last night that takes place in that universe. And the first time I played with him, he goes, oh, I remember what happened at this inn. And I was like, It didn't really happen, Scott. But it's good. I mean, if you're really into that universe, there might be some ways to, you know, get your friends who aren't interested in sitting down for a 5-hour D&D campaign to play with you in a similar space.
Yeah.
And we do RPG night every Tuesday as a drop-in. Some regular groups are there every week, so it's still very much alive. And when you said you drove by and you saw a bunch of young folks, if it was on a Tuesday, we have this one amazing preschool teacher who runs a group for kids who are like 8, 9.
I think it was Tuesday, actually.
It may have been Mr. Park. As you know, like, oh, we're here for Mr. Park's game. All these little kids roll in, and like them and their parents and this, you know, great teacher run through about a 2-hour adventure. He is very animated. The kids get really into it, and to him, it's about creativity and it's about early math skills for these kids.
Huh.
You know, you roll a die, you add it to a number. Is that more or less than the target number you need? It's very simple math. But the repetition of this is so great for young minds. I totally contribute my son's early math skills to playing Carcassonne, about having to do 2 points for each square and starting to multiply. Okay, there's 5. They're each 2. So what is that? And just that repetition, he's playing a game, he's having fun, but this consistent math use in games is so easy to get kids used to.
There's a lot of proven benefits in adults, too. I mean, there have been studies that show that gaming can help with memory and thinking skills and can even maybe help offset Alzheimer's and other diseases because it keeps parts of your brain active that most adults just aren't regularly using anymore. So, yeah, it's great for kids. It's a great learning tool, but it's also great for adults.
The cognitive development's another big thing, you know, helping kids to understand how to process. And again, as we're saying, keeping skills sharp as we get older to make sure that those cognitive skills don't decline on us is another huge benefit.
We hope I can get with that the better. Ellen and Powell, you're on the air. Hi, Ellen.
Yes, I'm with a family of 5, 4 of who like to play games. So it's been a challenge always trying to get the fifth one to want to play games. So we generally would play the games that she liked to play the most, which included like Clue and Catan. But now that our kids are all in college, we're finding that a lot of our games are disappearing because they're taking them to college with them because that's what the kids are doing. They're sitting down and playing games, which I think is great. We always have an annual tradition of having a Risk game out on the screen porch because, you know, that game can last 2 months. We have neighbor kids that would come and go on hot days, and they would just, play Risk over the summer, and it was a lot of fun. Now that my husband and I are empty nesters, we've gone to a couple games and or a couple of parties, and we've taken the game One Night Werewolf, which is great when you just have a bunch of adults sitting around and everybody has a ball, and we end up playing it 4 or 5 times because they want to play it again, and everybody wants to be the werewolf one time. So.
Well, thank you, Ellen, for calling. I appreciate it.
Sure. Thank you,
Ann. You bet. John Ward, we have to say goodbye to you. Thank you so much for joining us today.
Well, thank you very much for having me, and thank you both for joining me on the panel.
John Ward is Executive Director of the Game Manufacturers Association. Staying with us, Aaron Brown, owner of Tabletop Game Cafe in Clintonville. Also, Cheryl Harrison, editor of Drink Up Columbus and founder of the Beers and Board Games Club of Columbus. And coming up, we're going to hear from a game designer. So stay with us, and don't forget, give us a call with your favorite game, 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org. You're listening to All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. Welcome back to All Sides. I'm your host, Ann Fisher. We're talking about games this hour, the kind where your fate is often decided with the roll of the dice or the turn of a card. Still with us is editor of Drink Up Columbus and founder of the Beers and Board Games Club of Columbus, Cheryl Harrison. The Beers and Board Games Club of Columbus will host its third annual 24-hour gaming marathon to benefit Nationwide Children's Hospital this weekend. For more information, check out the link on our website at wosu.org/allsides. Also with us is the owner of Tabletop Game Cafe in Clintonville, Aaron Brown. And joining us now is managing director of game design at Cohio Go-Hio Games. Lucas Weiss, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me.
So how long has Go-Hio Games been around?
We started back in April of 2015 with just an idea for a game. Did a lot of playtesting, went to conventions, met with people to playtest the game we were designing. Then finally kickstarted it September of 2016, got funded in October, got the games out to people in March. So we've it's almost 3 years now, so coming up on 3 years since we've been designing games. It's our first game, so it was a lot of learning experiences throughout the whole process.
It's supporting you?
No. I mean, hopefully, eventually,
someday,
but yeah.
It's
yeah.
a sideline for you then.
Yeah.
A side gig or whatever.
Yeah. I like to stay busy, and that keeps me doing something I enjoy with my hobby, like outside of it, and I can design games while sitting there watching TV. I'll see an idea, and I'll be like, oh, that would make for a fun game.
Yeah, well, tell me what the process is for you.
Basically, I just – because I've been playing board games for – modern board games for probably about close to 15 years now. And it's just a matter of seeing something or like neat mechanics that you have in board games and then – or seeing like a theme or something like that that you don't see out there very often.
Like crabs?
Yeah, like hermit crabs. Like,
tell us about your game. It's called Crab Dash.
That's a new game we're going to kickstart in January, January 18th. Basically, it emulates a hermit crab race. If you've ever know what one of those?
Actually, I do know what they are. Yeah. Yes, I do know that.
So the game just basically emulates that. There's crabs that started the center of the board, and they're racing to the edge. Players are rolling dice to see which crabs move, how far they move, and how they move. And you're just betting on which one you think's going to win, which lane you think they're going to end up in. And then also you can play cards or reroll tokens to affect other players.
Are the tokens little hermit crabs?
The crabs on the board, yeah, they're standees. And then there's also tokens that you obtain throughout the game to like make people reroll.
Okay.
Their dice. So you're like, I don't want that crab to win. I don't want that crab to move forward. Reroll that one. So.
Oh, all right.
We got to play test it last night at Beers and Board Games, and after a few beers, I was surprised at how much fun we all had, you know, gathered around
Thanks for the surprise.
I was surprised Lucas made a good game. No, I was, because it, you know, it sounds like a very simple concept, but we were all, you know, gathered around the crab racing pit, yelling at each other and throwing out tokens. And
without harming hermit crabs.
Yeah, no crabs were harmed.
No crabs were harmed during the making of the game.
Yeah, that's a great thing. Like, there's, you know, games have two big things. They have theme and they have mechanic. And the real sweet spot is when they overlap perfectly. And so the mechanic and the theme work really well. Like earlier, Guy said, you know, he likes the thematic games where, you know, it's a horror game and, like, you know, you're flipping cards and you know you're getting closer to a monster or something. Like, having the mechanic, like this crab race, where you're, you know, there's a chance of one doing better than the other, and it's like this frantic thing of, oh, I want my crab to win, and it's like you are actually there, you know? And, like, it's such a sweet spot that when developers do that right, it is so much fun.
Yeah.
Yeah, and it's always a process with designing. The game obviously has changed over through playtesting and stuff like that. But we went to Gen Con this year and did playtesting there. It's a big convention in Indianapolis. But we had, like, a six-year-old – two, like, 6-7-year-old young sisters playing the game, and it was so great to see them, like, cheering for their crab, like, I want the kitty crab to win, like just seeing that, like, in person while that's what makes it fun. And
Kirk in Columbus, you're on the air. Hi, Kirk.
Hi there. Actually, I'm really happy that I got to go on after talking about the thematic games, because that's kind of the topic of my comment. My partner and I just moved to Columbus really recently, and she is getting her PhD in entomology, so she does research with bees and other pollinators. And we love this game called Hive. It's kind of like a simpler version of chess, and the pieces look like hexagonal dominoes.
Huh.
But we brought it to Columbus with us to try and make friends with the other people in her lab, and it's been pretty successful. We've made a lot of friends just by playing Hive, and I think it's great that there's this game that's based around bugs. I'm sure there's a lot of them, but this one just happened to fit perfectly with the stuff that she's studying and with the people that her lab are the topics that her lab mates are studying. So it's been great to make friends that way.
Well, welcome to Columbus, Kirk.
Thank you.
Yeah, thanks for calling. Mm-hmm. Michelle in Westerville, you're on the air. Hi, Michelle. Hi, Michelle. Oh, rats. We lost her. Try again, Michelle. Pete in Delaware, you're on the air. Hi, Pete.
Hi, Ann. My comment for you and your guests is my whole family has been playing role-playing games for the past 4 or 5 years. And one of the things that we really like about, and we've ended up playing like 3 or 4 different games, is in the when we have game design that really supports multifaceted play. We've played things like Shadowrun and Legend of the Five Rings, as well as Dungeons and Dragons.
What do you mean by multifaceted play?
Games that encourage not just using either magic or violence to solve problems, but also social and other problem solving. Games that encourage story and group cooperative play, not just hit the thing harder. And we have all bonded over games that are well designed to incorporate mechanically thematic elements that are also story based. And I want to highlight Shadowrun and L5R for that.
Okay. Thank you, Pete.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Yeah, it's a topic for a whole extra show about, like, I'm much more came into this from a role-playing game thing. Board games kind of came through the group I was playing role-playing games with. I've been playing D&D since my Stranger Times, you know,
Stranger
age.
Things
when
starts.
I was in, you know, fourth grade and the kid down the street had all the books and that's what we did.
Uh-huh.
And so I really relate to that. But, you know, at the same time we've had this huge explosion of board games, the same thing's happening on the RPG end. And it's a very academic approach to how do we collectively tell stories. And there are so many more game designers that are making these small, single-person press games. It's a role-playing game. And they're very much exploring collective storytelling and sharing the spotlight and about use of language. I mean, there's thousands of new games coming out all the time. And the indie game scene is just amazing.
We have an email from Amy. She says, I do behavioral interventions with kids in the community, and I often use board games. It allows me to work on turn-taking, sportsmanship, following directions, listening, and, of course, you guys added earlier math and all kinds of concept learning.
And logic, yeah.
Yeah, logic, right.
And that's where probably the cooperative games come in a lot of play, too, with those.
Yes.
They're behavioral with kids.
Yeah, you know, and
achieving a goal, a group
together,
goal.
Yeah. My son's friends, when they would come over and when they started to get a little too goofy, you know, I'd be like, hey, do you guys want to save these 4 treasures from a sinking island? And it's a cooperative game. It's called Forbidden Island. You can get it almost anywhere now, but it's cooperative. The island is sinking. You're trying to get this treasure off. It's a race to it. And, you know, you get these kids who are bouncing off the walls 1 minute and now, like, focused on working together about getting, you know, the collective goal done. Amazing.
D'Artagnan in Columbus, you're on the air. Hi.
Hi. Thanks for having me.
You bet.
I just wanted to shout out to Aaron Brown. Love that guy. Love Tabletop Game Cafe. And I also wanted to share my my favorite games, you know. Having a favorite game is much like having a favorite song. There are so many genres, it's kind of hard to choose just one. But I'm going to say Clank, and Clank in Space is just a fun deck builder style game.
Is that the game Clank in Space?
There is. The newest expansion is called Clank in Space.
Okay, gotcha. Okay.
Yeah.
Tell me about Clank. I just like the name of that.
Yeah, it's just it's a fun game where everybody is an explorer who is diving into this dungeon that has either a dragon in it or, in Clank in Space, a giant space entity. And you are building a deck that starts off as 10 small cards and slowly grows and grows as you explore and delve into this dungeon. And you're trying to grab artifacts and run out before the dragon gets you. Just a fun, lighthearted. I find it to be a fun, lighthearted game.
And there was another one, Unearthed.
Oh, Unearth, yeah. Unearth is another really, really great game. It's a simple game where, you know, you and your friends can talk while playing it, so it's not super, super heavy when it comes to concentration and strategy. And you're rolling dice and placing the dice on cards to obtain certain color stones to build monuments.
Wow. Okay, well, thank you, D'Artagnan. I appreciate your time.
Yeah, thank you for having me.
You bet. Wow, lots of games.
Ooh,
how,
yeah.
Do you change it up from time to time, but are there always your standards that have to be there?
Yeah, we have standards that you have to have.
Like, what are those?
You have to have Catan, and then there's, you know, particularly modern, like, things. Like, you have to have Love Letter. The Hive, which was mentioned before, we get tons and tons of date nights in our shop. And also, what I think is an amazing thing is we get lots of dad and daughter date nights. It's a great way, you know, I have a 9-year-old daughter, uh-huh. and like, I'm like, hey, Nora, it's you and me tonight, what do you want to do? And she's like, can we go to tabletop?
Duh.
I'm like, I work there all day, honey. but we go back there because it's a great way for dads and daughters to connect. And, you know, from Carcassonne, Mysterium, which was mentioned before, gets played all the time. Clank,
at his shop, they had to get the board replaced because of how often it was played. So
they wore out the board.
Yeah. And, you know, we purposely don't stock a lot of the traditional American family games because we assume people have them at
home.
Yeah, we have
Monopoly,
a couple
that kind of thing
of those. But, you know, where I'm like, you have those at home. I know you do. You can bring it in if you need to. But I'd love to expand your horizons and give you something new.
Email from Sarah. She says, my favorite game is Ticket to Ride. I am 36 years old and enjoy playing it with my friends. I grew up playing, and I also love to play games with my siblings and parents still.
Ticket to Ride is a great family game.
What's Ticket to Ride?
For him.
Yeah, Ticket to Ride. We have Ticket to Ride Europe, and then four different map packs for
it. Is it like a travel game kind of a thing?
So you have these destinations. You're trying to connect San Francisco to Atlanta. And you're going to do it by connecting segments. So you're going to go from, you know, Atlanta to Montgomery. Then you're going to go from there to St. Louis. And then St. Louis to, you know, Des Moines. And then you're going to keep going to connect it. Once your train cars of that color connect, you'll get the points at the end of the game.
Okay.
Very simple to pick up. And what's really interesting about Ticket to Ride, there's a great article about how it was a gamble for that company to put out an app version of their game. Everyone said, oh, if you make an app of your game, no one's going to play your board game anymore. They're just going to play the app.
Uh-huh.
But they saw whenever they would put their app on sale in the Apple store, a month later they'd see a rise in game purchases.
They want
because
to play
it doesn't
it in,
matter
in
if you play it on your phone or your tablet.
Okay.
The great thing is sitting around a table with some friends, with some family, talking, playing games, have something to drink, have something to eat,
uh-huh.
and being together. Like, the game is sometimes secondary.
Yeah. Yeah, right.
Yeah, it's a matter of, like, I just enjoy playing most of the time. I don't even care if I win, for the most part. I'm enjoying the experience of gaming. And that's one of the great things is I'm competitive by nature, but if I don't win, it doesn't bother me
because
I had a great time.
That's good because I beat you in three games last night. So.
you did. Yeah.
All right. So you've mentioned
a little
bit.
I beat you in your own game.
You did.
We only have a couple minutes left, but the Beers and Boards Games Club of Columbus, Beers and Board Games Club of Columbus will host its third annual 24-hour gaming marathon to benefit Nationwide Children's Hospital. It's at Four Strings Brewing's production brewery. Tell people about what they can expect.
Yeah, we will have, I think, every single game that I have heard mentioned today will be at this event. We will even have some one-off D&D campaigns happening. So if you're into any of this type of gaming, it's all going to be going on. We're even going to have some video games like Mario Kart and Rock Band, just games that bring people together and make people interact. It's $10 to get into the event. All of that's going to be donated to Children's Hospital. It'll get you a raffle ticket. We've got some really cool raffle prizes, including a tabletop cafe gift card.
Yeah.
We are going to be starting at 11 a.m. on Saturday, and we will be there until 10 a.m. on Sunday. So when we say 24 hours, we mean it. You do not have to stay for 24 hours because that is insane. But about 20 of us will be staying all night and asking our friends and family to donate to support that effort. We're going to have food trucks throughout the day and a portion of food truck sales and beer sales is also going to go to the event. So just come out for a beer and a bite and play a game with us.
It's a lot of fun.
Cheryl Harrison, thanks for joining us.
Thank you so much, Ann.
Cheryl Harrison, editor of Drink Up Columbus and founder of the Beers and Board Games Club of Columbus. Lucas Weiss, thanks for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
Lucas Weiss is the managing director of game design at Ohio Games. And Aaron Brown, owner of Tabletop Game Cafe in Clintonville, thanks to you as well.
It was a blast.
Thanks to the AllSides staff. Producer Michael DeBonis, assistant producer Shia Lanat, AllSides interns Kyle McKinnon, Courtney Gilbert, Dan Posniak, and Martin Coleman, with video production by Rich Blue and Amber Blue. Alan DiCenzo is the composer of our theme music. WOSU News and Public Affairs Director Mike Thompson, Radio Operations Director Kevin Petrilla, Senior Broadcast Technician Eric French. Thanks so much for listening today. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News.